Tech Talk. Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Harvey Norman. Computers, cameras, tablets, phones, drones, smartwatches. We have it all. Harvey Norman are the technology specialists.
This is News Talk.
Welcome to Tech Talk. Coming up this week, we meet Irish accessories brand Juku to learn more about what they do and why you should never skimp on the cost of a cable. The CEO of Nokia will join me to discuss their involvement in the national broadband plan. Plus, Feimin Kind Just Guelga, the Shock in the Guelga. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or tweet with hashtag TechTalkNT. Now, earlier this month, Irish company Juku Gear were acknowledged at the 20th annual IDI Irish Design Awards. It's a brand that I didn't know too much about, so I'm delighted to welcome Dennis O'Mahony of Juku Gear to the programme. Dennis, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. Tell us more about the company.
Well, Juku Gear is a high-technology premium accessory brand. And essentially, what we have is a range of premium products for accessories for both Android and Apple and mobile computing, which address both power, charge and sync cables, all your products, and we have a range of other connectivity accessories as well, like USB-C hubs. So it's basically a range of premium accessories for the mobile and computing sector.
And just tell me a little bit about the company itself. Is it an Irish company? Where are you based? That sort of thing.
Yeah, we're an Irish company, an Irish startup. We're about 3 years old, and we're basically founded by Dennis O'Connell. He's a long history in high technology retail. He's a great design background himself, so he's very strong in terms of product and industrial design. And so he's been very much hands-on in terms of the feel of the product and the need for product quality. So mm-hmm. it's a very high standard for us to have good product quality.
Yeah, you mentioned product quality there, which is very important, especially when it comes to charging cables and spare charging cables and that kind of thing, because there was a period of time, and it may break your heart, where I would just go on eBay and I'd buy the cheapest replacement charger cable I could find, and it would get sent to my home and it would either fall apart, not give me the full charge, or actually do damage to my device because it didn't have that quality. Whereas you've just handed me a big array of your products here just to look at, and quality does jump out. Talk to me, before we talk about the packaging, about the product itself. So how do you ensure that you are getting that quality and that the user experience will be good and it won't be falling apart after 5 minutes?
Absolutely. In fact, you raise a very good point there. There is a lot of charging cables out there which are less than the best quality, and I'm sure you've had the experience before in the past where you've had poor performance, your cables burn out, mm-hmm. they fail after maybe a short period of time. So for us, product quality is absolutely premium, and for us that goes all the way back to making sure that we're using very select partners that we have picked for our manufacturing partners, and we also ensure that these are rigorously tested and are fully certified to the appropriate standards. So for us, it's all about the product quality in terms of not just the feel of it, but in terms of the technology performance as well. Mm. And for charging, you know, we often forget about the quality of our charging products. You know, today we're buying very expensive phones and notebooks. We're perhaps spending over €1,000 perhaps on the latest phones. And we often forget that we really do need to ensure that we're using high-quality charging products with those devices. And oftentimes, we can make the mistake of skimping on poor charging cables, poor power adapters, and really, you're doing your devices no favor by doing that.
You pay in the long run, I think.
Absolutely.
It's a pain in the face. Nobody wants to spend 20 or 30 euro on a cable. You're like, oh, I could get it for 2 euro on eBay. But in the long run, from the quality of, you know, your device's battery, but also the cable itself, you hear some horror stories. And Dublin Fire Brigade, I remember a few years ago, were tweeting out pictures of the cheaper cables that were burnt out and can cause sparks, which is just the worst case scenario.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about one device in particular, which you handed me, and I am so excited about this. I've never seen anything like this. It's the Heirloom 10,000 milliamp backup charger that has wireless charging.
Yeah, we're very excited about this product, and our customers are just loving it. So basically, this is a power bank that has all of the latest fast charging technology. And so it covers both wireless charging. And as you know, all the latest phones from Apple and Samsung and Huawei all now offer wireless charging. But not only that, it offers the fast charging, quick charge technology as well for your existing Android devices, or it's future-proofed with PD power delivery charging for either your notebooks or your latest phones and tablets. So basically, with this one power bank, you can be assured to have the best possible experience no matter what type of device you have. And so when you're on the go, you'll never be left without a charge with this product.
The thing that I can't get over the most is how light it is, because I have, I think it's a 3000 milliamp backup charger that I carry everywhere with me. But given the nature of the phones that I'm using now, it gives me a little bit of juice, but it doesn't charge my phone up the whole way. Also, I've had it a long time. I love it, but it's kind of at the end of the road. And that's bulky enough. This is it's smaller. It's around the same size as the Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus. It's kind of small enough.
Indeed, that was when we were looking at the design of this product. One of the key requirements was that it had a form factor that was suitable to match your typical smartphone.
Mm.
And we wanted something that was still comfortable to carry around, but still perform at the highest level. So certainly, that's a key part of some of the benefits of that product is the ease of portability and the form factor that you have.
And when you're designing these products, you know, how much of it is guesswork? How much of it is listening to industry whispers to make sure that you do have, you know, the USB-C cable rather than just the mini USB or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, obviously, you know, you're looking at where the market is, looking at market trends, seeing where the industry is going, and you're trying to anticipate that and basically offer a product that you think really adds value to the consumer. So not just to add in features there that are tick boxes or just a feature list, but really offer value to the customer. So, you know, if for the products we offer, it's all about delivering value in the long term.
Mm.
You know, and for certainly with the product you selected there, the Heirloom, that's really a future-proof product. So not only are you guaranteed to get the best possible experience with your existing devices, but you're also going to be able to use that with all of the latest new devices that are supporting power delivery. And that's an exciting technology. You know, I could talk for hours about power delivery because it's really trying to solve a number of problems with existing charging technologies. You know, we've all, as you said before, we've all this problem with incompatible cable types, poor charging experience.
It's so frustrating. The incompatible cable types. And again, this is a Jess Kelly problem, but I'm going to moan about it anyway. Nothing frustrates me more when a new charging port or charger type comes out, because I feel like I already have too many chargers in my life. And I would love if a universal charging port would just exist and that would do every device that comes down the track. One of the main reasons I've stopped wearing a wearable is because I can't find the bloody charger for it. It's so frustrating. So for you guys, it must be sort of front of mind to ensure that you do have the ports that people are using now, but are also going to be using in the more of the mainstream, you know, in the coming months and years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the great thing about this technology as well is it's also not only is delivering a faster charge, which is important. We all want to recharge our phone and you know, we have maybe 10 or 15 minutes to give our phones a quick boost and we're off again. But it also delivers the safest possible charging experience as well, because now your wall adapter or your power bank is going to negotiate the optimal power level, the optimal voltage, the optimal current to charge your device with, and to do that in the safest possible manner. So you can be assured that you're not going to cause any damage to your device, but more importantly as well is that you're not going to overload the cable. And whereas with older technologies, you had this burnt out cable syndrome because you were potentially putting too much current, too much power through that cable, and then potentially causing a fire risk.
And that's not something that many of us really think about. You just think, this fits into my phone, there's a plug, it'll do the job. Whereas actually it can do damage, as you said, to the cable, to the plug, but also to the phone itself if you're putting like the incorrect voltage in. I want to talk about the packaging. because this is something, again, it probably is just me, but it's something that I get great pleasure in. Technology for me is a luxury. And when I go and I buy a new device, I enjoy the entire experience from either, you know, whether it's walking into a store or buying online. I like receiving the device. I like unboxing it. And there's something just beautiful about the packaging on your devices. They're very plain, very simple, very white, lovely shade of blue. How much thought goes into the packaging element, or is it sort of an afterthought in that we've made this deadly product, let's just get it on a shelf?
No, we spent a considerable time working on the design of our packaging. You know, we wanted something to be able to present the products in a clear but informative way across the entire brand. So we wanted consistency across the entire brand, but we also want the packaging to speak to the quality of the product. So really, packaging was very much front of mind. And as I mentioned, one of our founders, he had a very strong design background, so he was very much involved in that. And as well, we used one of our strong design partners as well, which was Dahlman. They also helped us with the packaging design. And we were very pleased to recently win that award for our packaging design. We couldn't be more thrilled about that, because I think it speaks to really the customer journey is not just from when they're using the product, but it's all the way back to when they're selecting the product and when that product is in the retail shelf, that they can easily select the right product for their need and for their application. So really, innovative, clear packaging is a key part of that journey.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, like, do you guys go into other stores and do you look at what competitors are doing and do you look at how you want to position yourself? Because, like, I don't know if this is intentional, but the clear white, just plain packaging here, that would actually make it jump out more to me than when I walk into certain stores and you see just walls and walls of accessories and it's so hard to distinguish what's good from the noise.
Absolutely. You know, oftentimes you see packaging and it can be very busy. Mm. It can be almost, you know, too loud to be shouting at you, and there isn't consistency there. So we really wanted the product to speak for itself, and we wanted there to be a consistent brand message throughout that. And we feel the design of this packaging certainly does that for us. And it's really, I suppose you might say it's the less is more kind of design aesthetic, but at the same time, really presenting in an easy to follow fashion the key information about each product. And when you open that flip lid on the front, you can clearly see what the features and benefits of that product are. Mm-hmm. So really, it's all part of that customer journey.
And it's nice, like I've opened a charging cable here now. So again, as you said, you open the little flap, then there's a window so you can see the product to ensure, because not everybody knows the name of the charger port and all the rest. So you can just see, oh yeah, that looks familiar. That'll do the job for me. There's almost a little guide on the left-hand side as to, you know, what each bit is for. And then on the back, you have, again, a short description, but it also says getting techie and it has the nerdy information if
Absolutely.
You are looking for
so,
that.
So, you know,
regardless of your tech level.
Some of us are techies at heart or geeks at heart. I'm certainly one of those people. Yeah. I just geek out on the specs and new technology. That's something I really get excited about. So for people like me, we've got the get techie information on the back. But for your average consumer, they just want to get the right product that'll do the job and be confident that they're getting the best possible product. And so we make sure that's easy to identify as well.
Does brand loyalty exist in the accessories business? And what I mean by that is, you know, if I'm buying a phone or if I'm buying a computer, I'll probably buy one, a brand that I've already used before. When it comes to stuff like this, accessories like this, you know, I use the charger cable that came with my phone, and when it breaks or if I want one for my office because the other one is in my bedroom, I'll go in and, you know, maybe it's just because I'm getting older, but initially it used to be whatever's cheapest I'll buy. Now it's, you know, whatever looks like it'll be durable and I won't have to buy 75 of them. You know, do you have that repeat customer, or is it that you want every first time customer to come in and buy one of your products and hopefully that'll like whittle down through the generations?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. Obviously, being a startup, we want to be able to clearly communicate to our customers that these are premium products. So for a first-time customer, we want to have them make that decision be an easy one, that these are quality products. But I think also when people are investing so much in their technology gadgets today, I think people are becoming much more aware about the need to have quality accessories.
Mm.
You know, you don't want to be spending perhaps €1,000 or more on your phone and then, you know, cheaping out on your charging accessories or on your charging cables and whatnot. It's I think people are certainly getting that message. If they're investing in quality technology gadget, they want to be sure that they're getting a quality accessory to go with that as well.
And so how do you articulate that? Because obviously you can't stand in every shop front and you can't have a pop-up on every website saying, we're deadly and we're not going to mess up your phone. So how do you get that across? Is it just from, you know, trying to do stuff like this, or what way does it work?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly the packaging helps. Obviously, we're placed in some of the premium retail locations, and I think that also communicates a message.
Mm-hmm.
For example, We're in the CompuBee Apple premium reseller stores throughout Ireland. But also, for example, you can find us in Selfridges in the UK and some premium accessory stores there as well. So certainly, I think where the product is positioned helps to communicate that. But also, for example, we offer a 2-year guarantee on our products, and that's clearly indicated on the products as well. So really, it's all about communicating that comfort level of quality and innovation to the customer. And I think that helps in giving the customer that confidence.
Mm. And so what's next for the company then? So you said there it's a startup, you're still very young, but you've got some great stores hosting your product. You've got some great quality products. What's next for you guys?
Well, certainly we're looking at expanding the product range into some additional areas. Some more wireless charging technology is another area that you're going to see a lot more of. You know, we have in this power bank, we're going to have other desk charging variants of that. And I think you're also going to see certainly more variants of power delivery, where it'll be providing faster and safer charging for not just for your phone, your tablet and your laptop. So, you know, we all have this problem where we carry around too many accessories. In the future, you'll just be able to have one charger.
That's
with
you. The goal.
And that'll charge everything from your laptop, your phone, your notebook, your Bluetooth device, whatever it may be. And of course, with wireless charging as well, there's a lot of convenience with that as well. You know, you've probably, the new Samsung earphones have just come out.
Mm-hmm.
They're offering wireless charging for their wireless earphones. We're expecting Apple to release a new version of their AirPods. Those also will have wireless charging. So I think those are the big trends that we're going to see in this industry.
So it's going to be a case of taking less with you, but making it work harder for you. Is that
absolutely
it?
Yes.
Interesting. As I said, this is an area that I love, and I do think when you go out and buy a piece of technology, it should be an enjoyable experience. Everything from a phone that costs £1,000 to a cable that costs 20 or 30 or 40 quid. The company, again, it's called Juka Gear. You can find them online and in store. But for the moment, Dennis Mahoney, thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, and just as we finish, just to say is for an exclusive offer for your customers, we're going to offer a 30% discount on our website if they use the Tech Talk discount code, and that'll be an offer we'll be running for a limited time for a few weeks. So any of your listeners can avail of these accessories at a 30% discount.
How exciting. So what's the website?
So the website is jukugear.com.
And it's JUKU. That's very exciting. Thank you very much. That's very generous.
Thank you, Jess. Thank you.
Coming up next, we learn about Nokia's involvement in the National Broadband Plan.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar told The Dáil at the end of February that he's hoping to make a decision on the National Broadband Plan before Easter. Now, as we continue to await that decision, many conversations have taken place about the best method of delivery of broadband around the island. We've heard in recent weeks from the likes of Imagine about their proposed solution, but should we be so quick to turn our backs on fixed fibre? I'm joined now by Cormac Whelan, CEO of Nokia. Cormac, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. Now, obviously enough, broadband is something that's firmly on the Irish mindset and has been for quite some time. Tell us about the work that Nokia has done delivering broadband and being part of the delivery of broadband elsewhere in the world before we turn our attention to Ireland.
So, yes, we've been a key player in the broadband delivery across the world for a long, long time. In 2016, Nokia acquired Alcatel-Lucent, which was a major fixed line player in equipment supply and services. And so we developed a sort of true end-to-end fixed and mobile capability as a technology vendor. And we've been involved in the delivery of broadband rollout, both fixed and wireless, across the world for many, many years. Most recently, of course, there's been a huge upsurge in interest in broadband, particularly in filling in rural broadband, which has been a major gap missing in lots of countries around the world. We've been involved in rolling out a new national broadband network for Poland, for the entire country. We're currently involved in talks across countries like such as Germany, Hungary and Italy. And we are a vendor of access technology to BT in the UK in terms of rural broadband rollout as well.
And a stupid question, but just explain what exactly Nokia's involvement is. Is it in the infrastructure? Is it in the deployment? Where exactly do you guys slot in?
It's in both of those. Okay. So we provide a lot of the technology in terms of products, but also the services that go with it. In some cases, it is product supply to large operators that actually do their own installation, delivery, commissioning and management. In other cases, we're a full-blown end-to-end service, such as in Poland, where we're building a national network and then building, operating it on behalf of the nation. So it's anything from new technology delivery and implementation through full end-to-end service and management.
And I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm curious, how are the processes in all those other countries in which you are working in comparison to the national broadband plan? You know, is it like surely delivering internet or broadband to any rural part of any country is going to be arduous, but how do we rank in comparison to the other processes?
It's not so much a question of process, I think, Jess. I think, you know, each country has its own different way of doing things, from the way it's funded to the partnerships to roll it out, to the different types of technology used. So it's not quite that there's a one-size-fits-all, in fact, far from it. But I think what we have seen is a massive upturn in funding, for a start, both public funding and private funding in making this happen. And I think on the edge of Europe, both the UK and Ireland have actually been way behind in terms of rolling out fiber deployment across the country. There's been no shortage of investment in large population areas, in cities, and in certain industries. But I think what's been missing is this big coverage problem to make sure that everybody has proper access to full broadband capability. And what's been missing there has been the rollout of fibre capability in the countries.
Okay, so let's turn our attention now to Ireland. We know that we're expecting a decision on the National Broadband Plan. We were told before Easter, so fingers crossed that does actually happen. But in the last number of weeks, we've heard from different alternatives to fibre. So we've heard a good bit about, could 5G be the answer? Is fixed wireless the answer? And so on. What's your take? Do you think full fibre is the only way to go to ensure that everyone has a consistent and fair access to fast broadband?
I think full fibre is the best way to go. It's not the only way, but I think the future of the technologies that we're used to is actually going to be a harmony of many things. 5G in itself is not a standalone end-to-end technology. It will be overlaid on top of 4G. But it is a fibre technology. You need fibre for backhaul and front haul in a 5G environment. And so fiber is going to be a requirement anyway. If you were to try and fiber the country versus try and wireless enable broadband for the country, you would need an awful lot more investment to do a wireless only solution. So I think the future will actually be about the combination of both. You will need a fiber rollout network for mass coverage. You will need fixed wireless access in the last mile piece for dense rural coverage in towns and streets and so on. And you will need full fibre deployment in larger population areas and particularly in industries. So fibre is by far the best solution in many areas, particularly when you come to MDUs, so mass development units, where you have large blocks of flats or apartments, where you have campuses such as university or even industrial parks. You need a fibre access because of the sheer volume of users and uptake required in order to still deliver the proper user experience. But it will be a combination of 5G capability overlaid on top of a good 4G capability plus fibre access. But fibre is needed in all the solutions.
And, you know, we heard Caroline Lennon of AIR. AIR had a press conference there a few weeks ago. And she was saying that she believes the timeline for the National Broadband Plan could be 5 to 7 years. Which, if you're living in a part of Ireland where, you know, you're trying to run a small business, but you have to go to the car park of a Starbucks to do any email attachments or to pay your staff, 5 to 7 years is just not okay. Do you agree with that timeline? Do you think an interim solution could be, you know, found to ensure that rural businesses in Ireland can stay alive?
I think the timeline varies depending on obviously the geography. I mean, we're experienced in rolling out rural fixed and wireless networks in many countries, as we said before, and you can get a dense coverage in a decent percentage of that very quickly. But it is always the last bits to try and get to that make it very difficult, whether it be geographically difficult or physically getting to a number of sites. The timeline, 5 to 7 years, it's going to vary depending on individual parts of the country. But mm-hmm. I think you can get some quicker solutions. I think the rollout of 5G would enable things like fixed wireless access to actually enable smaller communities quicker. You will still need to roll out fibre to a point, whether it be to the cabinet or whether it be to a pole or whether it be to the street. But you will be able to get more dense coverage with fibre to a certain point. One of the things about fibre rollout is it's not that you have to necessarily get it to every building or every house. You do have to get it to the most economical point. And that way you can get it to our current model of to a cabinet with mm-hmm. copper at the end. And depending on the number of users, with fibre to a pole, so you can then enable fixed wireless access down a street or down an area, or actually if you're looking up to an actual premise or a building for you know, dense coverage in terms of technology. So I think there's a number of ways for some quicker wins, definitely, but they will require still fundamentally a fibre rollout to the most economical point in the country.
Mm. And, you know, again, in the, because we've had so many conversations about broadband over the last little while, there was the thought process that not everybody in Ireland wants fibre broadband. So, you know, should we go out and assess who wants it and deliver it to those who do and ignore the ones who don't? Do you think that's a good model, or should we just, you know, do the national rollout and, you know, if somebody doesn't want it, they don't have to pay for it to go from the cabinet to their home or whatever?
I think if you look at the demand on technology over the last generation, mm-hmm. you can see that demand is always outstripping supply. Secondly, I think the scale and size of investment in rolling out a national network of any technology needs to be done with a view for long-term benefit to the country and long-term return on investment for the operators. And therefore, doing something that is short-term and piecemeal never works. The best analogy I think I can give you is if you look at the M50 in Dublin or the equivalent M25 in London, these things were designed for traffic, okay, albeit vehicles, not data, but the same principle. When they were built, they never envisaged the traffic requirements down the road, but they were built with 100 years of traffic in mind, but not accommodated for. And I think, you know, if you look at the M50, how long it took to actually become real and then get built, no sooner was it built than we had to expand lanes on it, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. If you talk to a number of operators around the world, particularly in the European telcos, if they could go back, I think probably 20 years, there would have been a lot more investment done in fiber much earlier because the return on it would have been so much better over time. I think anything now that looks at a short-term quick solution is a false investment, and this needs to be taken as looking at a 25 to 30 year plus investment in the country as a whole. There are some statistics around that show that broadband investment in a country actually has a direct impact on increase in the GDP of that country.
I would well believe it. I would well believe it.
Yeah. And when the World Trade Organization has some great stats on it, and I won't quote you the exact numbers because I'm sure I'll probably get it wrong, but it's for every X megabits of broadband increase, there is a 1% increase in GDP of a nation's economy. And we have to look at it that way. Is this investment looked as being a big amount of money and a time issue now? Or actually, if we look at it over the next generation plus, I think it becomes a very different business model.
So you've mentioned two points that I want to pick up on. The first one there is just about the investment. you know, there's this notion of, and we've heard it said a number of times from the opposition, we can't just write a blank check. The cost of this, you know, we've seen ridiculous figures printed in papers. We've heard rumours of the cost. Do you think that, you know, we should be dictated by the price, or should it just be a case of let's just get it done?
I think there's a bit of both. Common sense must prevail. However, I do think that the business case to be looked at, as I just mentioned a minute ago, needs to be looked at in the bigger sense of the benefit to the country over time. Mm-hmm. Anything that is a short-term solution that does not have longevity in it is a waste of money. Whether it be public or private money invested, it is a waste.
Okay, so is the submission that is before the government at the moment, and I know that you are a contractor, so you're not necessarily hands-on involved, but is the proposal for the National Broadband Plan as it stands, is that future-proofed? You know, are we going to be coming back to this in 15 years' time, realising, oh God, we need to, you know, up the capacity or whatever it may be? Or is this for 25, 30 years?
If the investment is done properly and it's rolled out far enough to the most economical point or beyond, if possible, then it is more future-proof than 15 years.
Okay.
Any solution that looks at doing something in less than that time frame, I believe personally, is a waste of money. If you look at doing what was happened, say, in the UK with the UK copper rollout, at the time it was ahead of its time, mm-hmm, compared to other nations. But the time it takes to roll out that network, the common guaranteed speed by the operator in the UK, mm-hmm, is still about 2 megs per home, with the regulator now saying it needs to be 10 by 2020.
Yeah.
That's because it's primarily a copper-based network at this point. The penetration rate of fibre in Ireland and in the UK is way below the rest of our partners in Europe. And you can see the difference in the economic return in the other European countries with a fibre infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
The investment being taken in Poland has a minimum 25-year view in terms of the cost and return. So I think you have to take a bigger bet strategy with a longer-term return. But it is this is a national infrastructure requirement. This isn't a short-term individual business need.
Okay, so again, the calls that we've had, and we had a number of guests on the show in the last number of weeks, you know, from the likes of Imagine and so on, who say that they can connect the country using their solution in a much faster time. Like, they have very, very ambitious timelines, but you're saying that, you know, good luck to them, but let's just keep the NBP focused on a fixed fibre solution. Is that correct?
As I said earlier, there is no one single solution,
yeah,
to future-proofing and enabling communications for a nation. There just isn't. But, and there are some shorter term quick wins than longer term. I think the future is going to be based on multiple technologies and multiple rollout solutions. But I think if you were to try and do a wireless only solution, you would need a much more expensive solution to do the same. If you were to do full coverage, you would need, I think there are various numbers, and I'm not deep into what Imagine's proposed solution is technically, but you would need, on a like-for-like basis, somewhere between 50 and 70 times the number of mobile base stations. They all still require fiber for the backhaul of those. They all require power and they have heat dissipation. So there's other things to the economy than just the check you write for the actual equipment and services.
Mm-hmm.
There's the power and aircon needs. There's the maintenance and support, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I think that the future will be about a fiber rollout. It will be about wireless coverage to that, both in 5G and 4G capability. And let's not forget, it will still be about some copper solutions to various parts of the country too, because there's been massive advances in what's called next generation access, NGA, recently, that allows, with the right fiber to a cabinet and then copper to a home, a number of users to get in excess of 100 megs of data speed through copper, depending on your network configuration at that geography.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be a number of different things going forward.
Okay, and final question then. Do we know, or do you, can you tell us, you know, if the NBP is signed off and given the go-ahead, how long before we see the first bit of actual action being taken place? Like, when is the first bit of tarmac going to be broken, or whatever needs to happen?
You probably need to talk to the National Broadband Plan team directly, obviously, for their rollout plans.
Mm-hmm.
But we have seen in a number of places, and with the conversations we've been having in Ireland, the ability to actually roll out within the same year. I think if we can get to an award, a decision from the government, you know, hopefully by Easter. I know one of the challenges put forward, I think, by the Taoiseach was that we needed to see what happened with Brexit due to cost issues. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with the potential delay of that now, I'm not quite sure what that means. I'm sure the Taoiseach will maybe say something about that soon, given that the delay has only been announced yesterday. Mm-hmm. But assuming we get something done, say, in the next couple of months, you'll start to see things being broken this year.
Excellent stuff. OK, well, look, that's a bit of good news. Cormac Whelan, CEO of Nokia, thank you so much for your time.
Absolute pleasure, Jess. Thanks very much.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com. We are now going to turn our attention to Seachtain na Gaeilge. So full disclosure, I went to an Irish secondary school. I loved the Irish language. I studied it in college in UCD. My degree is actually in Irish and geography, both super useful to the job of a technology correspondent. But I wanted to talk about it a little bit because I'm very guilty of this. I studied Irish for such a long time and now I never really use it. I'm the most guilty person of saying, sure, I have no need for my ability to speak Irish. And the man who's going to tell me that I'm in Egypt is Aidan O'Jah. Aidan, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having us in.
I should have said Fáilte.
Fáilte stock.
I failed at the first hurdle. Look, as I said, I'm delighted to have you on. And Seachtain na Gaeilge, tell us a bit about Seachtain na Gaeilge, because we've probably heard a lot about it, seen the posters everywhere, seen it trending on Twitter and so on. So what's the idea of it?
So Seachtain na Gaeilge is probably one of our main campaigns as an organisation. Conradh na Gaeilge, when we were set up 125 years ago, around the whole revival of Irish and Irishness back then, one of the main things they set up back then was Seachtain na Gaeilge, a week for the Irish language. And it kind of culminated around, there was a big collection to fund the Irish language at the time. And that's where it started. And originally they started the St. Patrick's Day parades back then, which have now turned into their own big thing. Nowadays, fast forward 1902, I think it started, fast forward 117 years, it's become a massive festival for the Irish language, not only in Ireland, but internationally. And one of the big things people always say is, well, it's not a Seachtain anymore. And we kind of joke about it, saying, yeah, it's the 1st to the 17th of March is now what we use. And we call it Seachtain na Gaeilge, or 17 Days of Irish, because it's big, it's grown so big. Schools are doing things the whole time. Community groups are doing the whole time. And it's kind of just this period before St. Patrick's Day, when people are looking to reconnect with Irishness and reconnect with the language and reconnect with our culture. And I suppose Seachtain na Gaeilge has grown from that. And now I think last year we had 60,000 events during the week, and hundreds of thousands or millions of people really taking part in something different to reconnect with the language and to get involved.
And like, so I, as I said, I love the notion of this, and I do feel guilty about the fact that I could sit my leaving cert through Irish. Mm-hmm. I, you know, did 3 years in UCD studying Irish. Mm-hmm. And if we were to try and do this interview in Irish now, I'd probably wet myself with the thought of it, because I'd be like, oh no, everyone would like make fun of me, or, you know, I'm not fluent enough. Yeah. I have this thing whereby I can understand everything in Irish.
Yeah.
But it's just when I go to speak it, you feel like a bit of a dope.
Well, that's, yeah, and I suppose that's what we're telling people, to not have that attitude, to get out there and give it a try. Give it a try during Seachtain na Gaeilge. Go to a pop-up Gaeltacht, go to a Cayley, go to a Kirko Cora, go to anything. There's different things on, different events through Irish that maybe not like Irish through Irish, or different. You can do yoga through Irish and various different things that you might do in your everyday life, but just why not do them through Irish?
Mm-hmm.
Go, and that's what's really, we've seen a massive resurgence in the last 5-10 years, especially with different things through Irish that people would normally do through English, like GAA clubs that are springing up in Irish. And one in Dublin has been hugely successful now with 20 teams. And now even in the last month or two, a basketball team has started in Irish in Dublin. And there's all these different things. That think of something you might do traditionally through English. And if you want to keep going with your Irish, give it a go through Irish.
Mm.
And during Seachtain na Gaeilge, why not go and try that? Search for that. Go to snag.ie, see what events are on around you, and just leap in. A lot of people get very worried about writing things in Irish. And I know I was, because I never went to a Gaelic school, or I'm not from the Gaeltacht, or I never studied Irish like yourself in college. And a lot of people feel a lot more comfortable speaking it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Seacht na Gaeilge works, because you don't have to go and you don't have to do an exam. Go in, jump in and use whatever couple of focal or
it's
whatever.
It's a bit of crack.
It's a bit of crack. Yeah, yeah. It's a bit of fun. And I suppose don't be afraid. Like, there's no one, despite what you might think, because of your Irish teacher in school or whatever, no one is going to correct you and no one's going to say no. People are very welcoming and very open to give you a hand if you want to give it a go.
Mm. You, some people may wonder, you know, basketball teams through Irish, like, how does that actually work? So I went to a school called Clos d'Iscon. It's an all-Irish secondary school, but I didn't go to an Irish primary school.
Mm-hmm.
And so in September when I started in Clos d'Iscon, I didn't have a word of Irish. And this is no word of a lie. I bawled crying every single day between September and Christmas because I was just so overwhelmed. But then I started playing Gaelic in the school.
Yeah.
And it was Tuesday after schools that we'd play. And because the teacher in charge was talking in Irish, you kind of got the gist of what he was saying because I knew how to play Gaelic.
Yeah.
And so I just correlated the direction with what I was doing. And it's a sneaky way of getting the language in, I think. You know,
That's
you accidentally
it.
Learn it.
That's it. And the number one thing I hear from I suppose my friends and people who went to school with me and Irish, like, people say, I'd love an opportunity to speak Irish.
Yeah.
I'd love to, like, I had Irish when I did my Leaving Cert. I had Irish in college, but I've kind of lost it as I haven't kept it up. Do keep it up and do actively search out for one of these things and say, you know, this is our language. This is important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, mata grog at Gaelic, if you do have that bit of love, give it a go. Give something a go. And it doesn't have to be physical. It doesn't have to be events. There's lots of things online you can do as well. And there's hundreds and more resources now than ever for the language out there.
It's kind of sad, but I think the most Irish I've heard in the last few months has been two people bitching about other people on the Lewis on the way home, which is just sensational. And they kind of forget that other people around them may also have Irish. It's, again, sensational. But the reason I have you on a tech show and we're talking about Irish is because there are a number of ways that you can, you know, use technology and also, you know, either develop your Irish language or just utilise it and just see, you know, the odd word written in Irish every day or so.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, it exists.
Yeah.
So what kind of stuff is out there? And, you know, is it just tokenism or is it the real deal?
No, yeah, very much the real deal, I suppose. And this is something I love about the amount of tech that's out there through Irish. And it's something we're always trying to develop. It's something we're always trying to get more of. But there's a huge amount of people using it and a huge number of people who use this. This is the way they use their language. They tweet every day in Irish. They do their Facebook and they vlog in Irish and they do various things in Irish or podcasts in Irish. And it's really, really grown in the last few years. And just to give you a bit of an idea, in terms of stats, I mean, there's 6,700 languages in the world, and this is a figure I love because we always say when you look at the various platforms that are out there, like Wikipedia has 292 languages, and Irish is the top air in the top 80 languages being used.
Wow.
The amount of articles. Facebook's in 150 languages. Irish is one of them. Gmail's in 72 languages. Irish is one of them. WhatsApp is in 60 languages. Irish is one of them. Twitter's in 47 languages. Irish is one of them. And then things like there's been a massive resurgence to the Irish language with online learning courses like Duolingo, where Duolingo is only available in 33 languages, and Irish is the 14th most learned language in the world.
That's so cool.
Out of, you know, thousands and thousands of languages in the world, the 14th most, over 4 million people have started learning Irish in Duolingo. And I think there's 970,000 active learners, people who are learning it actively on Duolingo. When you think about our language, our country, and these are people all over the world, a lot of Americans, a lot of people in the UK, about a quarter of those people are in Ireland. But there's so many people out there who are re-engaging with the language online, relearning it online, and that's their main method of using the language. And we're seeing them now coming into our events, coming into doing classes, coming into these clubs and various different things, using what Irish they've learned online.
So when you hear it's a dead language, that's total BS.
Yeah, like completely. when you see that our language, which is only spoken by a fraction of the population, as their daily language, well, up to a third of our country say they speak, can have an ability to speak it, but they don't, is in the top 15 languages being learned online and the main app for learning languages. I mean, that's huge hope for the language.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there love it. A lot of people out there want to use it. So it's all about kind of creating opportunities for them people to go and do that. We've seen massively, which what's been really encouraging as well, is the amount of people using it online. And there's various groups on Facebook, things like Gaeilge One, where I think it has over 10,000 members now, where people, it's just a daily group where people engage with Irish from all over the world. On Twitter, there's huge conversations about the Irish language always, and people get involved. There's a kind of a Twitter Gaeltacht. And recently we had this campaign called Trasna na Dunta to show Irish is international. And we had people in 100 different countries tweeting in Irish during those few days, which is, again, shows that there's people all over the world that that love the language. And there's a lot of ways, if you can't get to an event or if you can't get an opportunity to speak it, you can speak it online and you can use whatever Irish you do have online. And we've seen it as well in the last few years, a huge number of people flocking to podcasts like Bioa Reagan, which is a podcast that three girls I know do, and they're great. They've all got different connoty, and they're talking about various different things from Irish, from love to going out to death and everything in between. And there's other podcasts like Mother Folklore, which have been really popular in the last few years, talking all about the Irish language, the words, where they come from, people's different experiences with the language. And I suppose it's just taking it out of that negative attitude people might have had and showing about the different uses and different things you can do with it.
Mm. And the stuff like Duolingo and the different services that are out there, you know, is it conversational Irish? Because I do still, and again, even though I was fluent, and I think I kind of still am, but I do get intimidated going, oh my God, I'm not using the Tishal Ginnaduck. They're all going to laugh at me. You know, that's the fear factor that's out there. And I think that if I'm feeling that as someone who is, you know, Leifer or was fluent, then what hope does someone who's starting out? So if someone is listening to this now and they think, I want to re-engage with the Irish, if they sit down with the Duolingo app and they do the 15 or 20 minutes a day, mm-hmm. will they get to a stage of fluency that is not laughable in 2019?
No, yeah, definitely, definitely. And people applaud it so much. There's an Irish language festival that set up a few years ago called Féile na Gaillí. And last year, I think we had one girl coming over from America who'd never spoken to anyone in Irish ever in her life. But she learned Irish online. Just with Duolingo, so it was interesting to see, because from Duolingo she had a basis in the language, and I've met lots of people like this who just learned Irish in Duolingo. They have a lot of phrases, they have a lot of things. They find it hard when people are talking sometimes, but that's someone who'd never engaged with the language in any way.
Mm.
We as Irish people, we all have this basis in our language. You wouldn't believe it. And when we see people going back to classes, they fly through the first few levels of classes, no problem, because it's all in there, in the back of your head somewhere. And it's Quivan Linar Fad Rodagan and Tushir Fad Aon. So we see people who come back to the language after learning it. We all learned it for 14 years, most of us in school. You actually pick it up very fast, and don't be worried about making the mistakes, because most people who go to these events are learners, and I'm still a learner, mm-hmm. having not studied the language in college, and having not gone to a Gaelic school, I'm still picking bits up the whole time, and I'm still making mistakes. That's natural, and that happens with the English language, and no one laughs at you.
Yeah, that's true. And so, you know, looking at the different services that are available, Oscar Elgott, you know, does that give you an insight into the demand? And does it make you want to shout from the rooftops that, you know, it's not a dead language, that you can do it if you just give it a go? And, you know, maybe we all need to just give it a lash.
Give it a lash. And I suppose with this new growth and this new resurgence in the Irish language, especially amongst people, the growth in Gaelscoileanna, the growth in Irish colleges, and people coming out of those, and we're seeing it definitely at third level with a lot more people engaging with the language and getting involved in different events and campaigns. Go out, give it a lash, and this is only going to get bigger and bigger. And I really believe with the growth we've seen, more and more people are going to be looking for ways to use the language. More and more people are going to be engaging with it. Now's the time. If we hear people saying the whole time you're proud of the language, and I wish I had more Irish, give it a go. It's Seacht na Gaeilge. If you're ever going to walk in and say Gura Mahagat, or to your shopkeeper or to your bus driver or whatever, if you're ever going to say Slán or Diaguit, and start using those basic phrases, and you'd be surprised. I say them every day, everywhere I go, and you'd be surprised the amount of people who say Fáilte a Raibh, and you might not realise. people have ours. Or if you want to wear a Fáinne badge, we saw on Taoiseach wearing one the other day in the White House, showing you have a bit of Irish. And if you're looking for opportunities, but just by wearing a simple badge, so many people come to you and speak Irish. It's wherever I go, I always get people going up to me just because I'm wearing a little circle on my lapel.
I remember when I was in school, we used to wear the Fáinne Gaeilge every single day. And I'm looking at your one now going, I don't know where my one is. I must go and try and like dig through a jewellery box. I'm sure I do have it. But again, you used to wear it with pride.
This is it, and it should be such a thing of pride. And this is something I really got from going and visiting places like Wales, where it's such a badge of pride to speak Welsh, and they will automatically speak Welsh instead of switching back to English. So I suppose it's trying to create that atmosphere. I'll say we don't have a camera in here now, but I will officially give you my Fáinne for the rest of Shocking Greg. I've got loads of them.
Okay, fair enough.
But it's about kind of showing that, you know, more people speak it than you might think.
Yeah.
33% of the population said in the last census that they have an ability to speak some level of Irish. You'd be surprised. I've tried out walking around the streets in Dublin. It's on YouTube, walking around, just speaking randomly to people, Os Gaeilge, and you'd be surprised the amount of people who actually have a bit of Irish.
Yeah.
It's in there somewhere, and we all have a bit of it. Why not give it a go?
And the first baby step you can do, and I would urge everyone listening to this now to give it a go, is to turn your Gmail or your Facebook. Just change the language. Change it to Irish. Just do it now. So it's not a complex thing to do, I imagine.
No, it's not a complex thing to do. You have go into your Facebook settings, your Gmail settings, even your phone settings. If you have a Samsung with iPhone, some of the settings are Apple, iOS. Some of the settings are Os Gaeilge. It is changing bit by bit. Mm-hmm. But say if you change your iOS to say Irish is my first language, then some apps will change to Irish, like WhatsApp. And it's not hard. Instead of it's when it says... instead of saying Tom is writing, we'll say Tom Grieve, and it's very basic things. You'll still know how to use the app. You use them every day, but it will help you get back in the mindset of, yeah, I have a bit of Irish. I understand what that is. Your Gmail, your Facebook, get on, check out tweets in Irish. You can change your Twitter to Irish as well. Not everything is there yet, but we're getting there. We'd love to get Instagram and a few more things in Irish. But a lot of these companies have a huge love for the Irish language. A lot of them are based here at their European headquarters, and they're engaging with it too. So that's welcoming. It's good to see that as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome stuff. Okay, well, look, that's a small change that we can all make. I'm going to go out to my desk and do it right now. But for the moment, Gurmeet Magath. And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com, or you'll find the podcast in iTunes, Pocket Cast, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Patrick Egan is up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.